Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the poets that we are today. So, welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience. Get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry that we are made of. This is Double Helix, part of Late Night Poets. We are a group on allpoetry.com, and you don't have to be in our group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can talk to us in the chat, and you can read the poems as we do for the full experience. I'm Afasiana, and with me I have my co-host, Dan Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. Yes, you do have me. I am here, present and accounted for.
Excellent. I am regretting that I did not send Phil a Felicia Day song, because our contest is quotes by her, and I really enjoy her music. It's mostly parody or kind of geeky-themed musical-type things.
Yes.
There was a little while in my early 20s when her song was my ringtone, and it was, "Do you wanna date my avatar? She's a star, and she's hotter than reality by far." Anyway, I got some really funny looks, but it was a funny song. I really like her.
You're such a 13-year-old chick at heart, aren't you?
I mean, yeah, and I was like 19 at the time.
That's okay.
You have to watch The Guild if you haven't, and you will understand that song.
That's right.
Mind you, you might not understand the humor of The Guild if you're not a gamer, because it's really for gamers. It's a spoof of people who are really into something like World of Warcraft, which I play, so it's right up my alley. But Felicia, despite being a wonderful gamer and parody singer and actress, also has some wisdom, in my opinion. So I use quotes from her to prompt us tonight. We have a caller that I believe is Zach. Welcome to the show, Zach.
Hey, yo. How you doing?
Good. Welcome.
I'm back. Thank you.
All right. Let's get down to business. Our first prompt is, each one of us is finite, and if we can spread ourselves out in a way to inspire and help people to be all they can be, that is much more important than one person's glory. So that was something that Felicia Day said, and we are going to read the one by Owen Nichols. So, Dan, I'm going to get you to read that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Let's see. Oh, there it is right there. Okay. And I want to prompt, by the way, too, that I've been a fan of Aphasiana, not just her friend, but I actually was a fan. That's why I kind of got into this stuff. So I always write for her show. So I was very excited today when I saw Felicia Day, because I was like, ooh, I was looking for the Sinner and Saint show, because I always usually write for that. And then when I looked at the prompts today, I realized I actually wrote for this show. So anybody who's reading, since I am the co-host, I did write for the show, but I am completely ineligible for any prizes or anything. I actually accidentally wrote for the show. I literally just finished writing it and put it on there, and then I saw the prompt and said, oh, that was this show. But B, mm-hmm. I still owe you for tomorrow night's show, which might be close to when the show goes on, but I do have it saved, and I'm going to get you a poem for tomorrow night's show. Ooh.
Yes. Good.
I just got a giant error from Kevin saying I took too long and it kicked me out of the whole thing. Give me a second. I've never seen that error before in my life.
Uh oh, Kev.
You got logged out. Uh oh. I am so happy to see you right. Okay.
Yes, I was excited. And I like Felicia Day too, so all right, I think I'm on here. Give me a second. I don't know what Kevin did. All right, there we go. Hey,
Dan
NGW,
used to enter every single one of my contests, and he hasn't been lately, and I'm sad. So
I haven't?
Yay!
I thought I have
no.
been. I haven't. I missed them.
You missed a lot of them. It's very
upsetting. I have to stop doing that. I'll make sure I do that. All right, I have the – all right, so Owen, I have – and I think we also have somebody on the board, too. DW, I think, is on the board. So, hi, DW. All right, so here we go. Enough procrastinating. We have Owen Nichols, and this is From the Shadows. It is from the shadows I work, to influence, inspire, to assist. Those who I see that are in need, ones needing a hang-up, not a handout. Words to reignite their passion or self-esteem. Acceptance, of who they are. I try my best to do this as unobtrusively as I can. I am not seeking out the limelight or recognition. Sometimes anonymous assistance restores faith that there is good in the world. To those already disheartened and jaded with the world, alas, my assistance is finite, but try to maximize my reach, writing and sharing my poetry and humor to as many as I can, or at the least, make it accessible to those it may inspire. End poem.
Excellent read, Dan. I accidentally closed it. While I regroup, Zach, would you like to comment first?
Sure. I really like the there's like an acceptance of a kind of culture here. I think those who need to reignite their passion and self-esteem. So I guess those who are kind of downtrodden and without much self, you know, self-esteem, obviously. It's for them, and it celebrates their humor and their inspiration. That's kind of kept behind closed doors in isolation a little bit, and it's like kind of like, I guess, an opportunity to bring those folks together through this poem. So I really enjoyed that. It was well done.
It is. I really liked the needing a hand up, not a hand out. And I think there's kind of this misconception that when people are asking for help, that they just want to have people cater to them. And actually, they often just need help. I mean, I work a lot with people who are unhoused, so which is a nicer way of saying homeless people, because they are not defined by it. They just are currently unhoused. And the thing is that so many people are like, well, I just want you to take care of them. And I'm like, but if I help them write their resume and I help them get cleaned up for that and they have enough food and sleep to be able to go to that job interview and do the things, they can get their life together. I have seen it. You know, that's a hand up, not a hand out. I think seeing those possibilities is really great. Reignite their passion is a really great thing too. I've seen some people who are really good at that. Some people just kind of have that like glow about them that they get other people excited. And you know, there are some people. My late friend Dennis was always finding in people the thing that that made them special and encouraging them to find that and to follow through. And that does, you know, give them that self-esteem. If you point out someone's talent that maybe they didn't even realize they had, that gets their, helps them find what they're passionate about. And sometimes from the outside, you can see what someone's missing about themselves. I also really like that it says, do it unobtrusively. So you're not, one of the people who are on like Instagram, taking picture of yourself with every person that you're helping. It's like, I gave this guy a dollar. Look at this. I bought him lunch. I did whatever. Because that's not being nice for the sake of being nice. That's just being showy. Really, I think it's doing it as an anonymous thing is a lot more respectable in my view. I thought this had a really nice message, and that it really works well with Felicia's quote and with her character, Penny, in Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, because that character was like starting a shelter and helping people. And as much as it's a funny little web series, her character was very sweet and inspiring. So I think that it's vibes with her vibe. I enjoy that. Dan, what did you think?
I did think you have a great message, and I love the title, From the Shadows. It is from the shadows that I work. And that is a great way to describe, you know, doing something that, like you said, isn't in the limelight. It's just for the sake of doing good. And there is a difference. I mean, this just came to mind this second, but, you know, I'm not trying to get religious, but I believe in the Bible. I believe Jesus actually talks about, like, he condemns people who boast about praying and saying that that's not, you know, it's not what it's about. It's about a personal thing. And you know, prayer isn't necessarily, you know, whether religious or not, it's not necessarily a personal thing. You can pray for other things to happen. And this actually brought to mind a lot of things. I'm going to, I always quote the band Rush, and literally going to do the first thing, I guess, tonight. Neil Peart calls it Nobody's Hero. And he has a song about it where it's the Nobody's Hero, where it's somebody that does something that isn't in the limelight, does something in the background nobody really knows about, but they're actually the hero. I'm actually going to use an example of our show. I'm going to give our show a little bit of prompts here. Faziana, I don't know if you remember Ainsley McGray, that we actually had as a guest star on the show before. She's a musician from, I can't believe I can't remember where she's from, but I believe it's the D.C. area. She's a piano player and musician, has albums out. She's very good. And we actually featured music from her. And she came on the show. She was very down and out before she came on the show. She actually was almost giving up on life. Do you remember Ainsley Faziana?
I do, yes. She was awesome.
So she was actually very down and out before she came on the show. I'm honestly a fan. I reached out and kind of talked to her, and we became friends. And she came on the show, and she's literally been inspired ever since. Now she's not thanking us. You know, she reaches out to me every once in a while because we just kind of talk, and I like her stuff on social media. But this show literally inspired her because it was a. It was like people wrote poetry to her. She actually printed some of the poetry and has it hung on her wall today still. And I watch her on social media. She's putting out a new album. She's motivated. She's going on tour. She's in the studio all the time. Like, it literally revitalized her life. And that's almost what this thing says, because this is the first time I probably ever talked about it, to be honest. You know, it's not a, hey, look what I did, but whenever I see her on social media doing stuff, it gives me a little smile because, you know, I feel, you know, like I helped her. So I
love
that's
that.
It's true. It's
that
awesome.
Makes me
it's 100%
so
true.
Happy. I'm
actually,
so happy.
It's 100% true, Fazy. And she actually wrote me today and said she wants to go back on the show, not like a show like with all her stuff on it, but she just wants to come on and be a guest and talk about poetry. So hopefully she'll. So if you're listening, Ainsley, I hope she'll do that. But that's what this reminded me of, and I think there's so many. There's just so many of those type of people out there, right? Like you said, not the ones who are getting awards on television, you know. Not that. It's just these people who do these random acts of kindness, who kind of help other people out, and nobody ever knows about it. But that is one of those things that makes the world go around. So I think this is a inspiring poem and a good message and an important message. So nice job, Owen. All right.
Seriously, it is. That's wonderful.
You did tell me that this is going to be all happiness tonight, which I kind of need. So let's keep going. Let's see if we can continue on the positivity.
Okay. So I'm going to read one by Ben Hart. And sometimes he hits me in the heart, so we'll see if this is still positive. But I will enjoy it, I am sure, either way. Let's see. Infinite by Ben Hart. Do you think we'll ever be infinite? Maybe if we lock eyes and never look away again. Wouldn't we starve? Aren't we already? 1. I have been bracing my whole life for the waves collapse. Only my tides are glass, razors and ash, and I am tired of always breathing in, thinking this time it will heal me. It never does. The waves only rises, and we are just the diamonds of anxiety beneath. What does it say about us that the first thing we reach out to from the shallows of life was a woman in pain? Mine whispered upon my return to her heartbeat, "Welcome to a burning world, little one." But I knew what I signed up for, Mama. Ever since you let the sunlight fall through the holes in the roof and let it sing to your belly, we'll grow from here. Perhaps it's not them we were reaching for, but death, watching from the corner of the room, her words tangled in garlands of smoke, but her wry smile cut right through. I knew what I signed up for, Mama. Sam? Yes, love. What if she doesn't love me back? She already loves you back. She loves me too. That's not the same. Why are you asking me? I mean, this is the least cruel way possible. But what if this is not love? What if this is just me trying to get as close to you as I can? She's not me, Ben. It's her you worship. I see it in your eyes. They're the same as when you're looking at the clouds or sky full of stars. I'm the girl you call when you want to disappear, dive into the middle of nowhere. That is your chest and hope somewhere in there. You'll find a moment of peace. Fucking hell. You did ask. I held on to it. When you said that on the first day, God blew a kiss into the dim, and that it was still searching today for a cheek to impact a fraction of the body to touch and roar the rest into motion. Because healing was only the leap of faith across our open wounds. Even when my eyes fell to the sky between the burning constellations shining in bruised daylight and veils of monarch butterflies painting stained glass murmuration to memorialize in motion the finite. And I remembered, we must all become death, and so never die. Just relinquish the body and return single file to an eternal divine mind. But my dear, if all those lips ever kissed into being were themselves, imagine what we could create. Only in the screaming after death for her to give them back did I see their souls unbound, a starlight in black depths. Hello again, little one. Don't be too late, okay? It's not fair to keep them all waiting. Why did you never say anything? I would have asked for help had they taught me the word, when man could still understand what had hurt him. End poem.
Awesome read, as always, Faziana. Yeah, we love Ben to pieces. We really do. He's a very interesting character. Ooh, Ben, I just realized. I don't know if I, is that a painting or is that a picture? I can't really tell. Ben usually writes, paints pictures, or it's, I don't know if it's all paintings or it's digital art, but he usually has his own picture. And that looks like an actual photograph that he had, which is great. I haven't seen a photograph from him before.
It says on his AN that it's from a national park close to where he lives. It's a 30-minute bike ride, and it's a beautiful place to clear his head.
Oh, excellent. And Ben is in the Netherlands, so nice, flat, beautiful area there. So thank you, Ben. So, yeah, if you ever talk to Ben, he's a very quiet man. He's a young man. He's a young guy. But man, he can when he emotes through his art, he does it like nobody else. And you know, this is really great, and that's, I think, the inspiration and bringing, you know, bringing help to people. It's really nothing more than comforting people towards death. I mean, it's the ultimate thing that we all either fear or whatever. You know, we're all trying to live. We all want to live forever. We all, it's something we all are going to have to deal with someday. And, you know, there's so many quotes on it, right? There's Jim Morrison's famous quote of, you know, nobody gets out of here alive. And I forget where the quote is, but, you know, there's a famous quote of death is saying that it's no matter what you do, no matter how many friends you have, no matter what's there, everybody has to face it alone. You know, you're not going with somebody else off to death. It doesn't matter what you have. Everybody has to face it alone. So the way he kind of, you know, the way he crafts this to comfort, at least at the end, is really great, I think. And, you know, I don't know if Ben's a religious man or not. I'm not sure, but he's not necessarily – he's still getting into it, as far as, you know, saying that it's still just a journey, off to somewhere else. I don't know why this brings to mind, but if anybody has ever read Carl Sagan, he's one of my favorite guys ever. I had so close to meeting him, Carl. He was actually supposed to be, I live in Massachusetts, and they were opening a radio telescope that I got to be part of, and Carl was supposed to be there, and he was too sick at the time. He couldn't come. I was disappointed because I just would have loved to meet that guy. One of the smartest men I ever lived. He wrote book after book after book about how religion was evil and it was teaching people the wrong things and it's not the truth. And he always said that. And then at the end, to some of his later books, he was actually questioning God. And to me, that shows everybody has these, you know, especially if you're getting older, you start thinking about, you know, death. And so I think the way that he captured that here, you know, in this kind of story, I thought was really, really beautiful and a little bit different for Ben, which I'd love to see. So I thought it was a great job, Ben. This is one of my favorites that you've ever written. So if you're listening, keep it up, my friends. And Zach, lots of stuff to think about here.
Yeah.
What do you think?
a lot about death. Waiting for the salty tang of like the giant inevitable wave. And it kind of like reminded me of a heartbeat that's almost flatlining. It's very confessional. The parent relating to the parents, I kind of was reminded of Daddy by Sylvia Plath. There's that kind of confessional feeling to it. There's just torrents of words, like almost like oversharing, but like it's poetry, so you can't really overshare, despite how scary that could be. And others might feel awkward, but this is cathartic for the reader and the poet. And it kind of like goes to say like infinite, like the possibilities of creation. I love the side-by-side pairing of an accompanying image with the poem. I was reminded of like William Blake. That's something I try to aspire to. And also reminds me of Eminem's Infinite. And the death imagery reminds me of Margaritas at the Mall by David Berman. Purple Mountains, all of that is very relevant, and it's very well done. So thank you.
Thanks, Zach. Excellent references. And Faziana, as usual, you like to read Ben and did an awesome job, so what were your thoughts?
I love the flow of Ben's poems. I love to read them out loud. It's just like, as much as I messed up a couple of words, it just... I don't know, it, like, possesses me when I read his poems. I don't know how to describe it. There's just something magical about the way that his poems flow. It's a really scary image of that line of, only my tides are glass, razors, and ash. That is a dark description of, you know, the waves that we go through. And it makes me think about how, I'm mentally ill. So if I'm not on my meds, my highs are very high and my lows are very low. And so, like, that would be the crashing of the tide. It's like you have that really low is the glass, razors, and ash. And then if I'm properly medicated, then there's still ups and downs, but you know, it's waves that sometimes you feel a little bit like you're going to drown, but you're okay. It's not the glass and razors and ash. I feel like he's felt the really low lows. But then he also gets into like the beauty of like the stars and like the majesty. So I think he gets the really high highs too. And I don't mean high as in like, you're high on something, just emotional clarity. I really like how he works in like his mother and the connection. You know, the first thing you experience in life is a woman in pain. That's kind of true. You have like this probably screaming woman who's suffering, and that is kind of traumatic for babies. But going through that and starting off with a cry is very important for a baby's health. It gets them breathing right. So interesting connection that he puts there. But then there's the comfort from the mother that changes it. Upon my return to her heartbeat. So that part just really made me picture the baby's head like kind of nestling onto the mother's chest. And babies, and all people really, when they're close to someone and they hear their heartbeat or they feel it, even if it's just like really subtle and they don't even know that they're feeling it, naturally their heartbeat changes to match the, especially if it's the mother, but anyone who they're skin to skin with. So if the mother is calm after everything, if the mother is doing okay, the baby is more likely to be. And welcome to the burning world, little one. So, you know, there's, in a way, there's a gentleness, there's that welcome, but there's also that darkness there. The burning world. Mama was already pessimistic. Mama already had anxiety, and that gets passed on to the baby. So that's an interesting way of putting it. Like, he started with that darkness, with that anxiety. That was a generational trauma, which is a thing. I was reading this book. I think it's called... Well, it was something like generational trauma, where if your grandmother was pregnant when something bad happened and, like, say, went through a war or something, and that influences her so much that it influences her baby because of, like, the stress chemicals in her, then that baby, potentially your mother, is born with that, like, stress and stuff, like, built in genetically. And a woman, when she's born, already has, I think, I can't remember, I'm not a scientist or a biologist, but I'm pretty sure you already have all the eggs that you're going to have. So that is influenced by that, and it's like you physically inherit the trauma of your grandmother as well as, like, being taught things. So I was thinking about that when I was reading those lines, because it's like mama's trauma gets passed on to him, and mama's the emotionalness gets passed on through what she says. So that was a really interesting start to life and to the poem, because it introduces us to the whole idea of being influenced. So Dan, I know you wanted us to be super positive tonight. That was not the most positive start, but
that's okay.
You know, you could also think of it as it could go the other way. You know, if the mother's you know, full of love and hope, that could also happen. I really, really liked the part where it talked about it's the kind of the imaginary version of her that he loves, you know, not the real flawed version of her, you know, it's someone who he's put on a pedestal, the same way as when you're looking at the clouds or a skyfall, I'm the girl you call when you want to disappear. So someone who's like an escape, someone who is so kind of ethereal to you, that you, she's an idea more than a person, maybe. And that can happen sometimes, where someone just becomes like this ideal, especially if it's like unrequited love, kind of a far off thing of like, oh, they would be this way, and you have this idea of who they are, and maybe that's not who they really are. And so the way that he looks at her is a hint to her, because I think this could be interpreted two ways. It could either be he's talking to the woman who he looks at like that, and she's like, that's not me, it's her, it's your imaginary version of me. Or he could be talking about a friend, a mutual person who they know, yeah. So I could go off on tangents forever because I just love Ben to death, but I will move on to the next poem, so it's not entirely the Ben show. let's go to one. Pardon me?
I said we've done that show before. We've done the Ben show.
We actually did. You're right.
We did, yeah.
Okay. So this one's by Alistair Hugh Muir. I'm probably saying that name wrong. And Zach, would you like to read that one for us?
Yes. What lifetime gives? What is the meaning of this measured time? Perchance survival is what we embrace. But surely this resounds of self sublime, a narcissistic creature without grace, yet most behind a visage, outward, kind, suppress the demons, darkness, and deceit, a raisin dente of charity in mind, the chance to aid, not fight, makes life complete. It surely is a dichotomy, a choice, philanthropy or money to acquire. Is it correct to only hear one's voice or join the chorus of the global choir? When warped or driven crazy, evil lives, lives, lives. But sharing surely knows what lifetime gives. And poem.
Fantastic. Dan, would you start the comments, please?
Of course. So, yeah, what is the meaning of this measured time? Perchance survival is what we embrace. It's something I've thought about before, and you know, I think of bucket lists and so forth, and I think they're fun to do and so forth, but I'm not a fan of that because, to me, it can never be filled, at least for me personally. There's so much in this world I want to do. I'm not going to get to do it all. It's just impossible. I know that. I'll do what I can, but you take it all with you, and this is kind of talking more about, you know, what is a noble purpose in life? And to me, it's your legacy. And what are you actually leaving, right, behind? Are you leaving a pile of stuff that you bought? Are you leaving all these, you know, things that you did, that, you know, all these, all the places you visited and the Netflix that you watched? Are you actually, you know, leaving kindness and, you know, something else that you did? You know, is it correct to only hear one's voice or join the chorus of the global choir? So are you kind of joining the world and doing something, you know, not just for yourself? Now, if everybody was selfless in the world, what's the point, right? We all need to, you know, take care of ourselves. It's nature. It's instinct. And, you know, everybody deserves to have fun, including, believe it or not, me. Sometimes I don't think so, but, you know, even your own self needs to enjoy life sometimes. But it's, you know, thinking about that, what is that meaning of measured time, right? Because time just keeps going on. You know, I'm in my 50s, and I'm literally turning around right now. And where the hell did the last 30 years go? You know, it disappears into memory. And what is that legacy that you're leaving? What is it that's actually that you left in your wake? So I think it speaks to that, and very eloquently as well too, in a very, for lack of a better term, poetic way. So I thought this was really beautiful. Alistair, I'm following you right now. I haven't followed you before, but I'm impressed with this, so can't wait to read more of your stuff. And how about you, Daisy?
I like the language. Like, perchance survival is what we embrace. I love the word perchance. I don't use that enough. And interesting that we was capitalized there. I just want to say perchance a whole bunch of times. I also
perchance,
like,
you will say it throughout the night. Sorry.
Yes, I will. there's a lot of, like, kind of French influence in this, like behind a visage and a raison d'être. I love any excuse to put a little French in there. I think this has fantastic message, but also fantastic language, and those are a good combination. I also like the art. That's a really cool picture.
Yeah, I like that too. It's really fun when people add art to that. I think. I mean, that was another show I used to co-host with Bobby. Bobby, I miss you if you're listening, which was exploring. I'm gonna say the wrong word. Was it ephrasiastic? What's the word? I can't remember. But basically, she picked art. And we did poetry to art, and it was actually I'm gonna quote Casey Dick. Casey, I haven't heard from you in so long. I gotta read more of your poems. She's one of my favorite poets on here, and I know Faziana. I say that about everybody, but it's true. And I remember once I asked her, I really didn't understand what she was saying, what Casey was saying, and she said that it was a song. I had a song that she was going to, and she said what she does is when she writes poetry. When she listens to music, she likes to look at art, and she was listening to the music that was the prompt, and she was looking at a specific piece of art, and then the poetry came to her head. So I think all art forms can kind of mesh. So yes, I do like this this piece. It's very interesting with it. Sorry, long diatribe on I like the art. But,
no, I think you make a good point there. I can never say it right. The ekphrasis. Ekphrastic,
yeah.
where it's like you said, it's when you look at the art and get inspired. There were a few artists that I was like obsessed with a few years ago, and every time they came out with new paintings, I would write a poem inspired by it. If you look back at my poems from a few years ago, there's like a ton with images, and usually of women who are like trapped in something. I don't know. I mean, like it's usually like they're breaking free. It works for metaphors. But yeah, it's really cool how different styles of art can inspire each other. It's sort of like that game, that I forget the name. It's like Pictionary, but it's not, where one person draws it and then the next person says what they thought the person was drawing, and then the next person responds to that writing and draws a new picture, and it's like it goes around and it changes. But I feel like you could do it with more than just the art and the words. You could add, like, someone does a song inspired by it, and you try all different things that connect, and everyone would put their own little take on it, and it would just keep expanding to be more and more beautiful.
Excellent, yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's call up Parker Brothers. I think we got a game right there. We can make some millions. So, all right, I'm already lost here. Where are we? This is Zach, right? Zach, you got to read it.
Yes.
I
loved how Shakespeare's paraphrase at the start, time for chance survival. That also reminds me of Darwin. So that's a great fusion. And there's like a real sort of contributing your own verse feeling to this poem, like from Dead Poets Society. I got that feeling like all the way through. It's about making your own mark in the world, and that real carpe diem vibe throughout. Really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, let's keep going on with life as all these poems are telling us to do. So where do we want to go now?
Dan, I'm gonna get you to read the one by Brenda Ben Panda.
Yes, Brenda and Panda. Social status of self surely spreads. Social status of self surely spreads, especially who inspires all also helps. Sacrifice for society brings self-glory. So finite status turns unlimited surly. Sacrifice means self-interest limited, social interest without desire in head. Social service satisfies the soul surely, so desire for glory in life not necessarily. Subsequently, after death, fame follows, so during life, living time, help dear fellows. End poem.
Thank you, Dan. I like the follows and fellows little rhyme there at the end because it's more than just that. It has that ending that rhymes nice, but they both start with F. They have the double L's. It's like words that go really well together. That works well. I like the line, social service satisfies the soul, surely. Partly the alliteration is fun, but also I agree that it can be satisfying to help others. There was this episode of Friends, the TV show, where they were having a contest for who could do like a truly good deed, because Joey said to Phoebe that no good deed is selfless. And she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I do selfless good deeds all the time. And then she did it, and he's like, and how did that make you feel to do that? And she was like, oh, I felt wonderful. And he's like, ha, that wasn't selfless. Became this circle of, like, not being able to do something that wasn't helping yourself a little bit. Anyway, that's a tangent of my own. Zach, what did you think of the poem?
I thought that there was like a neat repetition and parallelism throughout. I don't know exactly the form of that, what it is, like the repeating couplets and some of the words, but I really like that. And normally I would balk at something like adverbs, but this time around it's definitely one of those rare exceptions to that rule of mine. And it's nice, like consonant and alliteration throughout. Kind of like brings home the feeling of infinite. It kind of drives home that feeling through like propulsive S sounds. Really well done.
Excellent, thank you. And I think Brenda Van Panda's style is Brenda Van Panda style, from what I know. He's gone to a couple of my contests that I've had before, and he has a unique style, which is something I always admire. It's kind of like Ben. Ben has a unique style as well. Like, I can tell it's him, you know, and I think that's always something to be admired. And I do like the alliteration. I thought of you as soon as I saw alliteration, Faizy, because I know you're a fan. And, you know, his repeated line of social service satisfies the soul surely, and then sacrifice for society brings self-glory. It's been the common theme. I mean, it works with the quote. You know, we talked about it before of sacrifice. And to me, sacrifice is true strength. And I talked about with this somebody before. What is strength? What is courage? You know, and courage, I don't think is selfish. I think it's more selfless. You know, courage isn't the person that is or strength isn't the person that's mean, that's able to, you know, attack somebody else. It's the person that runs into a burning building. And somebody that sacrifices for the good of others. So excellent message, Brenda Ban, and a fun poem. And we're going to keep continuing on and marching through the night. So what do we got?
Well, first I want to comment that I agree with you about strength. I think there's strength in vulnerability sometimes. It doesn't have to be, you know, stoic kind of strength.
It takes strength to care. You know, in movies and so forth, you see people who are supposed to be strong and tough because they're like mobsters and they don't care about anybody and all that. I don't think that's necessary. It's a type of strength. It absolutely is. But I think it's a lot stronger to care about somebody or care about things because it hurts, you know? So, yeah, there's definitely different types of strength, but I'm more impressed with that type. And we're actually very popular tonight. We got Fursifer Rogue. on the board, and Bill Borden is on the board as well, too. So, yeah, Bill actually said it's like that for me as well, Dan. I don't remember what I said, but I'm glad you agree with me. It really takes multiple. He's expecting me to say to remember something I said 4 minutes ago. That doesn't happen. It really takes multiple things for something to inspire my poems. It's like a puzzle each day. Yeah. And the music I hear, the art. Oh, that's what we're talking about. Yeah, absolutely. You got to get that inspiration. So, hey, thanks, guys, for being on the board. Really appreciate it. We're all kinds of popular today, Fazy. I like it.
I like how you think three people makes us popular.
Yeah. Usually it's zero people, so three is
three's a crowd,
we have
right?
People on the board. Yeah, we don't have people on the board sometimes. It's like three or four people now. We're killing it.
I like it.
Right.
I had 78 kids at story time today at the library. And,
oh, wow.
Like, one little kid walks up and holds my hand and goes, "It's too busy." And I was like, "I know." She was just like, "I like it better when it's just us." Like, what's happening?
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
Glorious Heights by Blue Harrison. Pray, let her settle. Spread her skirts. Lift her chin to the sun, knowing she's unspooled every viable thread and left them to the moon to loom. Let her gray, for she's lent her colors out, decade upon decade, budding forth when no other color would dare show its face. Amid the snow, she is a kited rainbow, facing the wind with mirth. And where were you? Did you spill eagerly to the wind? Or did you thread your hue to that forgotten spindle? Cobwebbed corner, dulled hue, did you volunteer for invisibility? So you've never known what it means to soar within targeted heights? End poem.
Excellent read, Fazy, and you can certainly tell you read for a living. I'm sure you had 75 kids enthralled, because as you were listening to that, I honestly was having I always like your voice so much. I was actually having trouble reading it because I just kept listening to the tonality of your voice. It's true. So with that said, I'm going to see if Zach wants to comment first so I can think about what I want to say.
Sure.
So, Zach, are you ready to comment?
I do that, yeah. There's like an elegant ascension starting off with the stanza. It's like, you got the skirts to the moon, and that was a kind of a great ascension. And then letting her gray, that's like just don't put any pressure on her, just let her kind of do her own thing, and I think it'll be okay. And amidst all that, she's very vibrant. She gets that sort of treatment. She gets to be herself, and though she is, I guess, aged due to the cobwebs, I kind of got like a kind of an older sort of person through that. I still still respect it, and it soars at the end too. With age, I think like it's like the further up you go, the higher up you get in age, something like that. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I did too. I agree. I really did like Let Her Gray. I love this. Actually, got inspired by Babbler. I don't know why, but she inspired me to use words that you shouldn't in places, like use verbs for adjectives and adjectives for nouns and things like that. So Let Her Gray. I just think that's a fun thing to do. So Let Her Gray, I really do like. And then before she let her colors out decade upon decade. And then amid the snow, she's a kited rainbow. So she's gray when she's gray, and she's, you know, her she'll put her colors somewhere else. But then amid the white, she's that rainbow, and it's the differences. And I think it's part of another quote for this contest where it's we can, you know, we can be different. Different is the way to inspire, right? It's really the way to you know. Crowds don't necessarily inspire, but the person that stands out in the crowd is the one that does. And I think, and that's what gets you the heights, right? That's the person that can actually get higher up. So I think it's really well done talking about that. And BW London, I forget if we said hi to them before, but they're laying in bed. You're my hero. I wish I was doing the same thing. I'm very tired today, but I have to stand up so I don't actually fall asleep in the show. And then Robbie's here, Robbie's Poetry. So it is officially a party now, Fazy, because now we're up to what, five people. I'm liking it.
Feeling it.
But what did you think? What did you think, Faze?
I really liked it. The first line, I was like, is this going to be sexy? Because it's like, spread her skirts. And I was like, ooh. Like, this could be a Wednesday night show for the I'm forgetting what the Wednesday night show is called. It's like Art of Seduction. There we go. Yeah. This could be an Art of Seduction show. But, no, I really, really liked it. When it's talking about the threads and, like, let the moon be the loom, it made me think about the myths that have the three women who use the thread to determine someone's fate. It's in a few different cultures. I think of the Norns in Norse. There's also in Greek mythology. There's many different cultures that have three or sometimes one kind of wise women, goddess type creatures who weave the lives of people. And it's kind of like she used to be the one weaving people's lives together, and now she's left it to the moon. She's reached her time when she doesn't have to be in control of everything anymore. She's retiring from keeping everything together, and she has created what she's going to create, and now she's going to enjoy what is being created. I love the let her gray, because she lent her colors out. It's not that it's a negative thing. It's like she gave so much of herself. It is time to just let her age gracefully, to not try to appear young. She had her time when she was always lending herself, and now she gets some me time. I actually kind of love it that there's been like this whole like revolution of like just be naturally gray, and I know so many older women who are like rocking it, and they're just like, I don't know, they look great. I don't like my streak of gray very much because it's not like the vibrant gray, but I do like it because it's just that one tuft that's like in the perfect spot. So I'm like Rogue from X-Men, and I'm like, that's right, I'm matched. that one little thread, because like Pulgara the Sorcerer, there's so many different like witch ladies who have that one line of white hair, and mine's not quite white, but I'm like, I will take that one line. It could just stay in that one spot, but it's I'll accept that gray. But decade upon decade, she's given so much that when no other color would dare show its face. So it's like when times were dark, she put herself out there. She made it colorful for other people. And it's time to let her not have to be the light for everyone. But amid the snow, she is a kited rainbow. And for that part, I think it's definitely metaphorical of, in the dark times, in the cold times, she is like that hope that is just a beautiful spirit to be around. And a rainbow is beautiful, but it only happens, you know, when it's rainy and usually like considered by most people unpleasant weather, although I actually like the rain. To be amongst that unpleasant situation, you get to see someone good, and maybe she's someone who thrives when things are falling apart. I thought this was beautiful. It really captured this character, this woman who I'm curious about if it's like based on a real person, if maybe it's Blue herself. But it's a gorgeous poem. I really like the metaphors in it.
Absolutely. Excellent. All right, cool. So where are we?
Laugh at the board.
Yeah.
Robbie says, if FaZe was beside us, she'd drain us of our poetry powers. What? No, I don't want to drain people. I want to inspire people. I want to give people poetry powers. What do you mean I'm draining it?
You want to, like, free flow.
You steal all the poetry powers for your own evil doings. That's what they're saying.
For your own nefarious purposes.
That's right.
Not make sense. I do way more, like, contests and tournaments and things than I do my own poems. Robbie, that was a horrible thing to say.
Yeah, what do you do with those poems? Why are you gathering so many poems, Faizy? Now I'm getting suspicious. What's going on there? I'm just kidding. I'm joking.
Oh, I see. He said, because it's the rogue thing. I said I was rogue from X-Men because of my hair.
Yeah.
And she touches someone, she, like, takes on their powers. Okay. I understand now, Robbie. I don't know where you were coming from that at first, but I see. It makes more sense to me now. I'm like, what did I do? Okay. We are now on prompt 2, which is, we are born an empty bookshelf. Life is what we fill it with, which is, again, a quote from Felicia Day. And our first poem is by Matt29. So, Dan, if I'm not mistaken, it's your turn to read. I'm getting confused about where we are.
Yeah.
Because
I
just read that last one. Okay, it's you. I'm making it you no matter what.
Excellent. Let's do it. I'm just refreshing here, so we're at Matt 29. Okay. The sky's the limit. Excuse me for a second. Yeah, I'm finally using the mute button for its actual purposes instead of not muting when I'm supposed to. All right, the sky's the limit. The quote, we are born an empty bookshelf, life is what we fill it with. A home begins with nothing, empty like a shell void of life. Slowly, color appears with painting. Excuse me. Aesthetics arrive, taking center stage, moving at whim to where they fit best. Furniture brings comfortable relaxation. Rooms of a home resemble us, empty like a bare bookshelf, without interests, likes, taste, individuality. All waiting to be filled with pleasurable things. Books from favorite authors and travel books. Pages waiting to be discovered and learnt. History books explaining life's differing rulers. Cookery books giving ideas for wonderful things. Gardening books to create unique arrangements. All feeding our minds with ideas, interests, and pleasure. Our bookshelves are our own personalities defined. Just like our homes are us through we are being read. End poem.
Excellent read, Dan. Thank you. And I really enjoyed this reminder that, like, what is within us is reflected in our surroundings, how we decorate our house, what books we accumulate, but also those things influence us. So it's like a back and forth relationship between you and your bookshelf. You put things into it and they fill you with what's in them, and it's like a cycle. The idea of like filling up a house, I tend to do that really bad. I I look a little bit like a hoarder, even though I have nothing. It's just like I'm rather cluttered. So I perhaps that reflects my cluttered mind. I'm a bit scatterbrained because it says rooms of a home resemble us. If that's true, I'm quite the mess. I like that it talks about how our interests and tastes, and it really emphasizes our individuality because everyone would have different things on their shelf. And, you know, as a librarian, I'm very particular about how things are shelved, although at home I do it quite differently than at work. They're, you know, the way that you categorize things kind of says something about you. I like that it breaks it into different genres. There's the history and I like that it says cookery, because I would say, like, cookbooks or cooking books, but cookery is just such a, like, great way of saying it. I wonder if he's British. It's just fun. From now on, I'm calling it cookery books. I don't know. That's my husband's area. He's a professional cook, so the cookbooks go to him. All feeding our minds with ideas and interests and pleasure. Feed your mind. Just like our homes are us, as though we are being read. And it's true. People can kind of see hints about you. I had some relatively new friends recently who invited me over to play board games, which I love. And, oh, my God, seeing their house, I was like, these are my people. I'm just like, I didn't know them very well, and I was kind of nervous about going over because I'm antisocial. But, like, everywhere I looked, I saw signs that, like, we were, like, kindred spirits, like, the books on their shelves, the games that they owned, so, like, the little, like, nerdy art and, like, just so much stuff. I was just, like, everything I looked at, I was like, I love them. We need to hang out more. I'm like, okay, these are my people. And then they, like, served food that was, like, my favorite things, and I'm just like, will you marry me, this whole family? Okay. Off on my own tangent again, as I do. Zach, what did you think of the poem?
Fantastic. I like the idea of filling the inside of the rooms with objects that reflect the insides of our brains and our experiences. I really thought that was cool. There are different sorts of scenery in the kitchen. That's the poet's own sort of decorated in the kitchen. And it's a great image. And it's a great concept to fill rooms and houses with the trappings and memories of our existence. I thought that was nice. And the life of the homeowner, I could see, like, a kind of, like, for me anyway, an emptier place, but, like, with a lot of my collections there, my records, my books, my CDs, my anime stuff, my games, I just saw my own house, what it would look like, kind of, hopefully in the future. That'd be really cool. Anyway, well done.
Thanks, Zach.
We have a new caller.
Oh, we do? Cool. Who is it?
I think it's Robbie. It has this little, like, hand raised, which is always Robbie. I don't understand how he does that, but, like, instead of where it's a phone number, where normal people, I'm sorry, Robbie, you're not normal.
You know I'm not normal.
Yeah, I knew it was you. For some reason, instead of the phone number for you, it's this raised hand. And every time I see that, I'm like, oh, it's Robbie.
Well, actually, I think people don't realize you can do this. Like, when you phone in on a cell phone, like, I just pressed hide, but the I don't know where it is in other people's phones, but there's a sign or there's a whatever that says keypad. You just press on that, and it gives you a virtual keypad, and you can press the extensions on that. Like, I always use that it's good to know that, because then when you're phoning, if you're phoning at a doctor's office from your cell phone, and it says, press 1 to be aggravated at this department. Press 2 to be aggravated at this department. You can actually do that. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Dan, yeah. Are you drumming?
No, I was actually banging a glass for no apparent reason, but I'm sorry you heard it. I didn't realize I was on mute.
I'm the DJ.
There's no reason for me to do that. I was just doing it. And I'm sorry, I forgot to put myself on mute. I can drum if you want.
Okay.
Okay, I have a pair of drumsticks right here. See?
Oh, God. Okay, no, Dan, that's very loud.
All right, I won't do
that. You're stimming. That's what you're doing. You're stimming.
That's what I'm doing.
It's an ADHD kind of thing.
Okay. Oh, it's way beyond that. And I've developed ADHD in my 50s. I don't know how that happened. I never had it before. I'm not going to say a product of modern society. I'm a victim of it. But anyway, glad to have you, Robbie.
Thank you.
Did you get to hear the poem?
I read it while I was on hold, and I enjoyed the concept of books as an extension of your environment, and it just made me think of I'm looking at my bookshelves. I have like two bookshelves that are just literally overflowing with books. And when my brother was helping me move, I noticed the same thing. He says, you know what? I think 80% of the stuff we're moving into your place is books. And, yeah, he was right. I have so many books. I feel bad for whenever, you know, someone has to move all my stuff out of my place. And I'm like, oh, God, all these books. But, yeah, I just like the general concept of books being an extension of your environment. And I was just thinking of like how I like, you know, how it lines up. Like, well, I'm thinking like cooking books in the kitchen, history books in your private library. You could have like a coffee table book in your living room. I thought I remember, I can't remember if it was I think Seinfeld played around with the idea, but I think maybe they actually, did see like a coffee table book, coffee tables.
Yes, that was Seinfeld.
Yeah, I think maybe I saw someone doing that in real life. I can't remember, but yeah. So I thought of those things, and in an odd sort of way, I thought about how it made me think about when this case, the environment is very comforting and comfortable, but then sometimes an environment can be uncomfortable. But ironically, because it's trying to make you comfortable. It sounds kind of funny, but one time I was in a coffee shop, and it was like one of the major chains. You know, it wasn't like a mom and pop or whatever. And it just, this thing about it that creeped me out. I couldn't put my finger on it. Then I realized like the way all the furniture was arranged and everything else and like the music they chose, that it felt like almost like it was like in the Matrix. Like it just felt like such artifice. It actually felt creepy. Like I just felt like I was in a planogram or diagram where there's a customer A will be in this corner here, and this is being maximum efficiency and maximum productivity. You know, he'll buy our coffee, and it actually felt quite icky and kind of creepy. And I thought of that because I thought of how this, in this poem, it's like the ideal environment, and the environment is reflective of you. But you know, sometimes when you come across that, you know, you start to think of the opposite too. Like your mind like enjoys that sometimes, to think of like, okay, now what's the opposite experience that I've had of this? So that was interesting to me.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Would you like to move on, Fizzy?
I figured out why I'm so cluttered. It's because I don't have enough rooms. You're like, your private library and your dining room and all the things. I'm like, I've never had a house as big as I could have these things.
Yeah.
The solution is someone needs to get me a decent house.
Well, I don't have a place like that either, but I'm thinking of the ideal situation, you know. I do organize. I do organize my books. Like, I try to have the philosophy with the philosophy, and you know, like the mystery or whatever with the mystery and all that. But yeah, I don't have a private, you know, library in my bedroom. No, I don't.
Yeah, that's what it is, Faizy. It's the house's fault. You know yes, that's what you're gonna think. All right, anyway, it looks like we have a poem up there.
We do. All right, so since Robbie is new, I got to put him to work. Please read the poem by Vengeful Pumpkin.
There we go, Vengeful Pumpkin. This is the end. I took my old bookcase out, toppled it on unremarkable grass. Later, it became a cemetery, a plain of broken teeth reminding me of what I did wrong. End poem.
Thank you. This is a really cool brevity. When it says I took my old bookcase out, it kind of makes me think of, like, I took my old life out. I got rid of that version of myself. Like, the things that were on it no longer represented me. Toppled it onto unremarkable grass is kind of like you're not, sanctifying your old self. You're not saying, like, oh, look at how great I was. Because you mentioned a Seinfeld reference. There was a thing where they argued about why would you keep books? Because he's like, you're not going to read it again. What is it, a trophy to show what you did? I found that amusing, despite the fact that I have a lot of books. But also I'm like, yeah, libraries, don't waste it just sitting on a shelf. People are using it. I'm not biased at all. So I really liked the unremarkable grass because it's just, but it's not about putting your books out on the grass. It's about putting that old self. It's like you're just burying it out there. It becomes a cemetery because it's like the old you is dead. Although the line that freaks me out is a plane of broken teeth. I don't know. Something about teeth really bothers me. I have nightmares where my teeth fall out, and I'm just like, broken teeth. It reminded me of what I did wrong. So that part I really like because it's like you sometimes visit the cemetery of your old self. You're looking back, you know, when it does, like, the Facebook memory or whatever, it comes up and it's like, 10 years ago, this was you. And you look at yourself and you're like, oh, God, why did I say that? Or why did I wear that? Or who was I with? Like, yeah, apparently I have an inappropriate past. But you just look at, like, wow, what did I do wrong? And what used to be on your bookshelf might be things that you're not so proud of. Maybe you had books that that you would not currently have. And, like, for example, like, maybe you had something that was, like, racist or something, and, like, now you know better. But before, there were things that interested you or viewpoints or, like, sources of information that were skewed. This is really interesting. Also, shout out for an awesome username, like Vengeful Pumpkin. Yes, that needs to be the name of a band. If that is not a band, it should be. Dan, what did you think?
I think that I actually just followed Vengeful Pumpkin just because of his name, and I honestly did that. Yes, that absolutely could be a band name or at least an album name. I thought this was great. I'm taking the liberty to say that this is the end is a quote from the Doors song, The End, which is a great song. If anyone's ever seen the movie Apocalypse Now, it's like the opening song. It's an amazing song and an amazing movie. Anyway, way off topic here. I thought this is really interesting and. Just kind of the way I like the way it's set up, where it's kind of falling down the way he writes. I thought that was cool, but then keeping everything as a bookcase, right? Because your old bookcase, your books can are definitely a reflection of yourself, and they're part of you. you know, I think about that with a book. The first time you pick up a book, it's just, it almost, to me, it's empty. You know, it's full of promise and it's full of hope, but there's nothing there. Once you read it, now it becomes this thing. And yeah, I remember that Seinfeld episode too, and I always wanted to literally go argue with Jerry, because I'm rereading a book right now. I have books I've read 10 times, you know. He's like, why would you read it again? You know, Ahab and the whale don't become friends at the end. They have an argument. And I don't know. I've read books multiple times. So I always wanted to go have that argument on that episode. But it's interesting how the books become a cemetery. And I think, to me, it's just a metaphor for books becoming of yourself, because you kind of, you know, I always said that music is a reflection of a person. You know, if somebody is listens to lots of different kinds of music, a lot of times it's an open person, somebody with specific types they listen to that style can reflect their personalities. And I think books are the same thing. And so this person with their books just off on falling off, that can be themselves actually kind of dying out. So it's a really interesting metaphor and a beautiful brevity. And Faizy, you have to keep me here because I completely forgot who already commented. So who should comment next?
I think Zach.
Okay.
Excellent.
I was getting this feeling of like regrets throughout the piece with the old bookcase. And I kind of literally went through the exact same thing with the bookcase. So it was just like my imitating art a bit. I felt like a guilt with my bookshelf being busted and whatnot. And it was out in the rain. Like before we moved, it was out to the sidewalk, you know, before the movers picked it up. It was all broken. And it's like I was aching for like a transition between that younger and older self. And because the younger self, I didn't used to have Junji Ito or Kentaro Miura or listen to Isis, Neurosis, or Purple Mountains before my mother died and all the other trauma that I went through, it changed me. So I felt that with this poem, and I thank the poet for allowing me to connect to that part of myself. Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's, you know, it's when a poem makes you feel about your own life and feel that connection, that's a good poem.
Yeah.
Robbie, have you commented yet?
Not yet. It just popped into my head that the teeth, the broken teeth, maybe it's like when they talk about like when you're chewing on an idea, or like I think sometimes it's kind of that idea that like an idea is unpalatable so much to you that it's like you broke your teeth on it. So, you know, like kind of like the thought of something is just like, you know, like kind of like you're gnashing your teeth. That kind of general imagery. So I'm wondering if maybe in this poem, it's like the path that he sees is so unpalatable to him that it's like, you know, he chewed on the thoughts of his past life. It was life before, and it broke his teeth. So, you know, I don't know.
I like that.
It popped in my head. I was like, don't forget it, Rob. Say it before you forget it. I was wondering too on the unremarkable grass. I took that as possibly one of two ways where you're regarding your past as unremarkable. And that's the grass, like that's just like the fields of your past life. Or it could be more like what you said, where it's, you know, you feel like you haven't gotten anywhere. So like the fields of your life now aren't anything remarkable, and you're, you know, throwing the cemetery of your old books out onto that, the unremarkable fields of what your life now is. And I really, my mind just like, It's like a quantum computer almost, with like trying to decide which of those two it is. It's like it's literally thinking like from 1 second, like, no, it's that one. No, it's the other one. No, it's that one. But I love it when poetry does that, where you know, it's making your mind skip back and forth, literally, you know, by the second on thinking, well, you know, is it this interpretation that I had or the other one? I think that's a really cool thing to happen.
Multiple meanings can be really interesting. That sounds like how I always feel when I read Peter Solway's poems. I'm like, does it mean this? Does it mean that? Does it mean... I always feel really stupid when I read his poems because I'm like, is he brilliant or not making any sense? I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure he's brilliant, but I just don't quite follow sometimes.
Well, it reminds me how we have this local poet, and I was talking to a friend about this, but where I was kind of wondering how I felt about it, where like someone would say, well, does the poem mean this? And he says, well, it could mean that. And I was kind of like, oh, it's kind of cool that he leaves it open to interpretation. But if you do that too many times, like if you're in person, like at a, this is kind of a different situation, but like you're at a, like an open mic and that, and you know, that's the only thing you ever say, then it's kind of like, well, people start to wonder, like, you know, is he putting any, like, you know, meaning behind this, or is it just, you know, more abstract, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know sometimes things can be made of things that weren't intentionally there. One time Rex was commenting on one of my poems, and he went on this big thing about, like, how it was all political and stuff, and I'm like, no, I saw a cat. it was nothing. Like, it was just a stupid little, like, I don't even know what I was thinking when I wrote it. And he turned it into, like, this big, complicated thing. And I was like, I wish that that was my intention. But it was not that deep. All right. So let's see. We have Jesna Sajan, and this is called Empty Page. Hi there, I'm your empty page. I see people smiling, so strange. I'm so tiny, wailing, wondering, who are you all? Where is my home? I see two people. A lady picks me. She looks with love. A hummingbee, a strange language I can't understand. It's between two people holding hands. My page is empty, but now I know better. I yell out loud when I get wetter. Days later, I yell louder. Mom and Dad, I realized years later, I was loud. I felt bad. My days started filling in with memories of colors and shades of toy accessories. I was getting busy, watched by my parents. Days later, I started playing with grandparents. Years later, I filled all those empty pages of my parents and grandparents in many stages. I learned many new things. When I grew tall, my pages were written and family became small. People I saw in my baby days were forgotten. They loved me when I was small. Now they are rotten. Filled with calumny, deceit, treated us like dirt. We stopped going to people we know as we got hurt. My pages became full, filled with highs and lows. My priority became tough words and blows. I stopped down one day to tear out the old pages. My hurts to myself and others were my wages. I saw my glory when I filled my pages in plenty. But as I grew, my pages became empty. I filled it with work, tiredness, pain, and sorrow. I had nothing much left for tomorrow. I realized, when I was old, that photos were better. Memories were brighter with colors than each letter. I found happiness with each finite memory. Each told a story. The rest was history. End poem.
Great, thanks, Joe. Thanks, great job, Daisy. I love Jessna. She writes for a lot of my contests, and she's always a pleasure. Really interesting taking herself through her life with the empty pages and everything that you kind of fill up with your story, right? It's I've thought about that before, where just think of how many stories there are in the world, right? All of us had stories all day long today, multiple little stories, big stories, and every one of us is a story, right, throughout our lives. How's that story going to end? What's the next chapter? And her just kind of filling those empty pages, but then realizing that a lot of that is just emptiness anyway. It's just things that happen. And isn't that true that so much of our lives is just that? It's not highlights. Like if I told you to, you know, tell me about last year, you know, last year was 365 days, 24 hours a day. There was a lot of time last year. You can probably sum it up in about, you know, 10 minutes, right? Because most days are just regular days that we go through. So are they just kind of empty, kind of regular pages, or are they things that really matter? And so I took the photos as kind of like metaphors for those memories that you want to take. Because most people aren't just taking photos of every single thing, right? Whereas your memories are everything that happens. Well, photos are usually take for special things that you want to remember. And those are special memories because they're things that you will remember forever because you have a photo of them, right? So those are the special things that you kind of gather. So very interesting, and I love the rhyming. She did a beautiful job. It was a very peaceful, happy read. It just felt good, and that's a hard thing to do with poetry as well. A lot of times it's the meaning behind it, but coming out of a poem where you just kind of feel, I could feel nostalgia, I could feel kind of like contentment, and that's hard to do, and I think she did that with this poem, just in the feel alone. So, excellent, Jesna. Always love to hear from you. Let's go with Zach.
I thought that it was a neat take on, like, the empty page, blank slate trope. Very kind of a rich sort of concept that she delved into. And there was, like, a rising and a falling throughout that was, like, in tandem with, like, the saturation of their own experience, like an ebb and a flow that's not black and white but multicolored and multidimensional. That was very cool.
Excellent. Thank you, Zach. And Robbie?
Well, it's kind of along the same lines. I like how the nature of the pages and the nature of the book changes along with the tone of her life. Like it sounds to me like at times the pages are really full and the book is really rich and full, and there's other times when the pages aren't so full. And one thing I like about poems is when they make you think of something that you want to pursue in your writing yourself. Because I think I've seen it in like some writing myself, but I think it's something that I've thought of doing myself and maybe my own variation or whatever. I can't remember if it's a kind of a chicken or the egg situation, but anyways, I was thinking about like magic books and how the nature of that and how like you would have a book that would be like protecting itself by making the person think that they're reading what they want to read in the book. And, you know, and that sort of thing and how, and just all kinds of little things like that on how a magic book would mutate and change based on what situation it's in and what it needs to do. And it made me think of that and how I want to write on that and pursue that. So I really, really like when a poem does that. And overall, I like the kind of self-reflexive quality where it's like, it's a narration talking about a narration. Do you know what I mean? It's like the narrative of a poem talking about the narrative of a book. And so when you have that kind of self-reflexive analysis isn't quite the right word, but art, I guess, is a neat thing.
Excellent. Great comments. Faziana, you are up. Or down. I don't know where you are.
Sorry.
Are you there?
My phone was being weird. I couldn't tell. Okay. Sorry, I was distracted. I couldn't really hear Robbie's comment. But I am here, and I enjoyed reading the poem. I I like how she went through the stages of life, and how she kind of put it from the perspective of, like, the baby doesn't even, like, know. Like, it's a strange language I can't understand because, you know, when whether it's your first language or not, it's still brand new when you're first learning your words. And then I like the kind of self-reflection. It's like, I realized later I was loud and I felt bad. You recognize that that you weren't necessarily the best when you were little. The way that you change perspective on things, like the people who she liked before ended up treating her badly. I liked when it talked about, like, wanting to tear out the old pages, and then also seeing that, you know, some things were really good, and then some things changed, whereas, like, when she was older, she started filling up her pages with negative things. It was all work and pain and sorrow. And I kind of think, like, that sounded like a midlife crisis kind of thing, like realizing, like, look, all of my pages are getting filled up with this. That's not what I want my story to be about. And then to change it and find things that are beautiful and start recording things as images, the images that she wants to be able to keep. I thought this was really creative take on the prompt and nice attitude.
Thanks, Faizy. Where do you want to take that next attitude next?
I think that you should read the one by R.G. Kemal.
If you, your think is my command. I don't know if that makes sense, but it is. It's called Life. Life is like an empty bookshelf. Some do not bother to fill it. Some fill it with books on mysteries and thrillers. And a few fill it with books of knowledge and poem.
That was a very nice brevity. Short poem with very short lines. And somehow that just makes it, like, even more profound, that it's just, it's very succinct. Some do not bother to fill it. I like that. It's not just like some don't fill it. Some do not bother to fill it. You know, you have the opportunity to make your life mean something, and some people just don't put an effort into doing anything. And that's an interesting way of putting it. Mysteries and thrillers. And then others fill it with knowledge. So, like, you can go on adventures or you can learn. There's, like, street smart versus book smart here. And, you know, you could probably have a combination of it. But the point is, fill it. Don't just leave it empty. You know, fill it up. That's a really a lot to say within such few words. And Robbie, what did you think?
Well, the way this was talking about, like, some don't even try to fill their bookshelf, and then some do. It actually made me think of, I saw that in a different way at a bookshop because they had they almost couldn't give away their Shakespeare. It was like the complete works of Shakespeare, including the sonnets, for like $3. You know, it's, what a deal, right? Like, it was such a value in that. And 50 Shades of Grey was flying off the shelves. And I'm throwing shade to that, like, I don't care. I just don't care. And I just found that depressing that, you know, they literally, they can't almost literally like give Shakespeare away. But then, you know, 50 Shades of Grey is just like, woo. But even if you didn't do the comparison, just the fact that such a classic is just sitting there, right? And you can't get people to read it or not, well, you know, get people to read it is kind of the wrong way to say it. But the fact that there are so few people that will partake of that is something that depressed me. and then I like how the in here it talks about, well, some, you know, it talks about how there's, you know, some will fill it with mysteries and thrillers, some will fill it on with books, and then, but it makes another indictment, and few will fill it with books of knowledge. And again, that kind of goes towards the like the Shakespeare point, like there aren't as many people that will seek out, you know, the more academic books or the kind of higher end, I guess you could call it, books. Of course, there's nothing wrong with mysteries and thrillers. I mean, Sherlock Holmes is like some of the best stuff out there, but yeah, when it comes to like pure knowledge, it doesn't seem to be as common. And I think especially these days with how modern society is, and like, I think there's real degradation of attention. Well, yeah, it's like pretty much shown. There's such a degradation of attention span because, you know, we're so used to just seeing as our mediums of entertainment and that we're used to the 1 minute sound bites in that. And because of that, like, you know, when you say to somebody, well, this book is 500 pages long, so you might, you know, maybe you'll read 70 pages today or something like that. It's like, not going to happen, right? Not as much now.
I'm guilty of that. I mean, I used to read a book, like a novel, every day, and I can't even remember the last novel I finished, and I should be ashamed of that as a librarian.
I think that's more, as you get older, though, you have more and more commitments in that. And
yeah.
I think it's more that as opposed to, like, I find myself, I don't read as much, although I try to, but it's more because I've developed more hobbies, and there's more time dedications in that. But if it wasn't for that, I would definitely be reading more. And, like, with both of us, like, we want to read more. And I think even that in itself is a difference. We're conscious of the fact that we love to read, and we want to read more.
I miss loving reading. Since my brain damage, I actually have a really hard time, like, getting into it the way that I did before. Like, I used to like see it like a movie in my head, and now it's like, this word means this and this word means, it's just, it doesn't process the same. So I get really frustrated because I'm like, I want the magic. Zach, would you like to comment on the poem?
Sure. I thought that this piece had the same cadence and feel like, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get with your books on the shelf. So I thought that was a colossal brevity to bring to the picture. Well done.
Dan, what were your thoughts?
It reminded me of a Buddhist kind of parable, actually, and which is very short and kind of like, you know, follow the path of light, that type of thing. And it was, you know, some people, and to me, mysteries and thrillers, even though, you know, you guys are correct that, you know, there's great stuff there, you know, Sherlock Holmes and so forth. But to me, it's he's talking about just people fill their days with entertainment instead of actually trying to learn things. So I thought it was a nice little parody of that. And few do that, and it's hard. And it reminds me of a story of Buddha that I heard, which, this guy wanted to follow Buddha, and he looked all over the place, and he was going everywhere and trying to find him. After years, he finally found Buddha, and he walked up and said, "Buddha, I've been looking for you for everywhere. I want to follow you. I want to learn the ways. Please teach me. This is what I want to do." And Buddha turned to him casually and just said, "Don't fall. You know, do what's right. Don't do what's wrong. Follow the path of the light." And then turned and started walking away. And the guy said, "Buddha, but I've been looking everywhere for you. I mean, that's it. Every child knows that." He said, "Yes, but very few actually do it." And that's kind of, it reminded me of that as well, too, that, you know, we do, I think it was Rod, can't remember who said this, I apologize, you know, we spend our days just scrolling through mindless TikToks that we forget 3 seconds after they're gone, as opposed to, you know, actually, you know, trying to learn things. And we all do that. We all need mindless meditative entertainment. But, yeah, that's what it reminded me of. So great job, RJ. All right, we have 15 minutes left, and our fate is in your hands, Viviana.
Okay. So still to prompt two, we have one by DW London, who's been on the board. So this is all to the same prompt. Most people chose prompt two. Zach, would you please read the one by DW London?
I think there might be a SoundCloud.
Oh, SoundCloud. SoundCloud, right. SoundCloud.
But I didn't get it before the show, so I did not give it to Phil. We don't have it in a way that I can push it. Sorry.
Okay. Walking Alone by DW London. I walk alone with sanity. Life is there, but it shadows me. It is all that I want to be, just to feel its energy. Walk alone with reality. No or none can see. Nobody but me. Perhaps someday someone will see the fiery flames that burn with me. Wear a mask so the world won't see hellfire's heat burning in me. So I choose solidarity to keep the world away from me. End poem.
Great read, thank you. This was a pre-write, but that was directed at the contest, and I think it works nicely for that prompt. I really like the line, life is there, but it shadows me. And just like wanting to be the energy, but that first line too, I walk alone with sanity. I feel like I walk alone without sanity, personally. Walk alone with reality. I like that it kind of, it like each, the stanzas start similar but different, but kind of sets it up to be different as well. Sanity and then reality and hiding from the world, wearing that mask. There's a lot of repetition of me, and it makes it more personal in a way. It's like, it's not just this is a vague thing. This is like something that he, or the character that he's in, is experiencing. It's like an individual's experience, not just general, because there's all that repetition of me. Dan, what did you think?
I did like also I walk alone with sanity, and most people do think they're a little bit insane, but to me, I'm saying, right, to us, we understand ourselves most of the time, and it's trying to express, you know, as poets, I think we all have felt that before, that we express ourselves, and, oh, this poem, I like this one, this is great, and then nobody gets what you're trying to say, right? So, you know, we think we're sane, but everybody else maybe does. So I walk alone with myself, I thought was good. And I could analyze every single line in here, but it is interesting being that person that, at least this is what I'm getting this from, is kind of, you know, maybe someday somebody will see me. Maybe somebody will actually understand. But otherwise, I'm just going to choose solidarity. I'm gonna stay by myself and forget the world because I just don't fit in. You know, the world is so different than me. I'm the sane one. Everybody else is insane. I think we all do feel that some way. Some days we do feel like we're insane, we're the wrong ones, and we don't fit in because we're weird. But other times it's like nobody understands me. I understand me. I know what I'm trying to say. How come nobody else does? And it's amazing that 8 billion people can feel like that. And I'm sure everybody's probably felt like that at some point. So excellent job. And I'm completely lost on who has to comment next. So, Faziana, if you can help me with that one.
How about Robbie?
One term that came to my mind, Dan, was solipsism. It's like the only thing you can be assured of that you can know is your own existence. And it's a kind of a parallel to me to walking alone with sanity. It's like you can only know that your viewpoint is the same one. And I think especially these days, in this day and age, with everything being so political and so many burning issues that so many people feel so strongly about, that people really do feel a lot like that. It's like my viewpoint is the right one. It's not quite the same thing as, you know, my own sanity. It's the same kind of general principle. And with this poem, I saw some other things, just like Zach had heavily identified with one poem because of some of his experiences, I identified in some ways because of mine. Like, wear a mask so that the world won't see me. Hellfire is heat burning in me. Like, for myself, just because of the way my life worked, I was never really able to tap into what I felt my personality inherently actually is like. And just to be able to engage. Like, I'm just someone who I have such a fiery mind, right? And before, like, I was always made to stay at home and this and that. And so there was that disconnect, right? And I feel like still sometimes, like, I don't have to maybe hide that, but people can't see it. Or they don't see how much of that burning in me. Like, that I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do project number 3, 4, 5, and 6. And it kind of pushes the world out from you. And it does make you feel a little solitary in that, because you feel like people don't understand just how much, in a situation like that, how much of a world is like coming up inside you, but you can't. You're like trying to catch up to finally expressing it and engaging in it. I kind of went off on a tangent there. I don't know how much of it made sense, but. Also, this, like it says too, is all that I want to be, just to feel its energy. So that kind of goes back again to like where I was talking about, like with my own personal experience, that feeling that energy of like, I finally can feel the energy of being able to actually engage in all the things that I want to do and all that, and I finally understand that energy and I want to engage in it more. So that's the more personal bent that I got from the poem.
Cool. I'm going to skip ahead to Dan's, because I'm hoping to get both Dan's and Zach's in here in the last 10 minutes. So, Daniel, please read your poem.
Sure, absolutely. And this is called The Parable of the Crowd and the Boy. I saw a boy somewhere in memory. He was not like those around him, a castaway from the mob, a point and snicker target, just the cruelty of laughter to a crowd. And individuals in the crowd follow others within the Spellinger, and the crowd moves on the trail most traveled, from the crowds of before. The road was paved and signs were planted as trees, and the trees they replaced, but now float in the ocean as used toilet paper. The boy cried as he walked into the forest to escape as far from the crowd as possible with only his eyes to guide. Alone without safety of the crowd, he saw that the trees were trees, and he understood what they were. And he saw that there was no path where he has not been. And his tears nourished the earth as aloe plants grew in the wake of his tears. Deep within the forest, he saw a girl who smiled at his approach. As an experience as new as each footstep ahead. The girl said, "Who are you?" The boy answered, "I am me." And the girl smiled with soft laughter, "I am me as well." In the breath of a day, many years did pass, and the boy became the father and had a boy of his own. One day the boy scraped his knee, and the father took him to a store to stand in a long line to buy the latest discovered aloe plant remedy. The boy asked, "Dad, everyone in line for the aloe seems so sad. Why do we have to stand in line with them?" And the father said, "Someday soon I will take you into the forest and you will understand compassion for the crowds." And no one in the crowd knew who the man and the boy really were. End poem. I have to fix those spelling errors. I'm going to do it right now.
I didn't even see them, but I understand that, like, whenever I read my own stuff out loud, I'm like, oh, I need to fix that. I've always a good habit of reading your stuff out loud as you edit. I am not saying this specifically at you, Dan. I did not see any problems, but I know it of myself.
I actually wrote this literally like five minutes before the show. I put it in there because I like I said before, I thought I was writing for Sinner and Saint, and then I realized. So I was going to spell check later, but I didn't realize I was writing for the show that was going to start in like 10 minutes. So, but anyway, thank you for letting me read that.
Yeah, I loved this. A parable is a good way to put it. I should do a contest that's just parables. I like that it's all connected, you know, where the now float in the ocean as used toilet paper. Wow, that is a statement, you know, not just toilet paper, used toilet paper. It goes from a beautiful tree to used toilet paper. But the boy, when he's crying, is like nourishing the aloe that will later become something that soothes someone. That's like the opposite, where it goes into the positive kind of cycle of that, how the pain, the tears can create something beautiful, just as something beautiful can create something kind of gross. Although, as much as, you know, used toilet paper is gross, it you know, is necessary. So it still has its purpose. And then having that connection with the girl, I like that it's I am me as well. It's like part of being a human with a healthy mind is recognizing that other people are people, that, you know, these creatures around you have an internal world like you do. That's one thing that, like, I think it's sociopath. I'm pretty sure sociopath don't understand that. They don't feel that. They don't recognize that everyone is like them, that they're all people. And that's a big step of, like, humanity in many ways. So to have that where it's like, I'm me as well. It's like, oh, like, the recognition of others, but also the recognition of yourself as, like, realizing that, like, you are a person. When you describe her, too, it's who smiled and experienced as new as each footstep came. Like, the closer you got to her, the more you got to experience her, and that it was such a positive thing. And then, you know, he's going to take the boy into the forest, and that's going to make him appreciate things and see the crowd in a different way. This is so deep and wonderful. I love it. Zach, what did you think?
I thought it was amazing. It had like a real water world feel to it. It was a post-apocalyptic environment, wasteland. But instead of, it was like an ocean, I guess. And then like washing up to the shoreline, we had this character who kind of just finds themselves, finds another. I thought that was a really cool, like, a parable with, like, lessons and morals imparted. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting the notice that we have 90 seconds left. We will have to write I will write more comment on Dan and Robbie, if you could as well. Write him one. That would be great. And I'm sorry, Zach, I didn't get to yours tonight. But tomorrow night I have Part Sinner, Part Saint, and I didn't get a lot of entries in that contest. So I am really sure we're going to have time to read the carryovers, and that way these are not lost for another 2 weeks. They will be read. It will be
tomorrow.
Good. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much for our callers and the people who hung out with us on the board. It was a party. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.
Good night.
Good night.